Welcome to another special edition Buzz Marketing for Technology podcast, conducted in cooperation with Marketing Profs. I'm your host, Paul Dunay, and today we'll be debating conversational marketing. Is it irrational exuberance or the next big thing? So here with me to weigh in on the issue is Pete Blackshaw, Executive Vice President of Nielsen Online Strategic Services, who has some skepticism about the abuse of the term conversation, and Jim Nail, Chief Strategy and Marketing Officer for Symphony, which is a TNS media intelligence company, who feels conversational marketing is perhaps a bit overhyped. So, Pete, why don't you kick it off for us with a level set on what do we mean when we're saying conversational marketing?
Well, the term is becoming an increasingly big tent that I think encompasses social media, consumer-generated media, word of mouth, you know, marketing. I think it's this whole notion, in many respects, it's a bit of an echo of what we talked about in the early phase of, you know, the internet about one-to-one dialogue building with consumers. But it just kind of captures this whole essence of listening to the consumer, participation. I think we all generally agree on the spirit of the term. How can anyone not like the concept? I think that the watch-outs that I've been raising, and I know Jim has reinforced in his own ways, is, you know, are we being too general? Are we hyping it up too much? Are we not thinking about the right areas that we need to invest in to be truly conversational? I tend to focus a lot on things like customer service and consumer affairs as critical building blocks of this era. But I think in theory, it's right on. I think what we need to dialogue with is how do we keep that term credible, meaningful, and sufficiently well-defined that we don't, so that we don't lose our way. And I think marketers have a historic tendency of losing their way when they come up with these new concepts.
Sure. And I think it's almost, I think what I heard you say is creating a standard for the term conversational marketing. Now, Jim, in a recent blog post, you wrote about a study that mentioned spending on conversational marketing would outpace traditional marketing by 2012. Is this possible or is it just hype?
See, that's what really set me off because, as I said in my blog post, I fear that we're climbing the hype curve and hitting the peak of inflated expectations. And most of us were there in 2001 when we hit that with the internet and lived through the ensuing trough of disillusionment. And I greatly fear that we're heading that way now. My point of reference is we are 13 years into interactive marketing, internet marketing, web-based marketing, whatever you want to call it. And throw all in, you know, everything you can think of that falls under that banner, and maybe it's 10% of total marketing spend. And so you're trying to tell me that in 5 years, at which point this idea of conversational marketing or Web 2.0, whatever you want to call it, will be maybe 7 or 8 years old, it's going to grow, you know, an order of magnitude faster than interactive marketing has. It just is beyond belief.
I mean, I think part of the issue here is, you know, what are we measuring against in terms of marketing spending? I mean, I think, for example, you know, we still think a lot in the context of the paid media budget, and in fact, in the realm of conversational marketing, what may really be funding the growth in this area is on the operation side, which is currently things like, you know, customer service, call centers, consumer affairs, consumer relations, which typically doesn't get considered as part of the marketing spend. And I think the big issue that I have, and actually this goes back to some early research Jim and I did a long time ago and that he led independently while he was at Forrester, but this whole notion that if we're going to be credible in this area, just put aside the media spending allocations for a moment. Do we have the proper listening infrastructure in place to do it with authenticity, to do it with credibility and the like? And I would say the answer right now is a big no. And I guess my big watch out as everyone overhypes the term conversation is that it's not being met with meaningful operational infrastructure so that consumers, when they hear us say we're the new conversational culture on the marketing side, they then knock on our door and try to provide feedback the old-fashioned way, and they basically get, you know, brushed aside. And that's where we run into huge issues. For all these folks that are talking about the conversation, I don't think they're putting a critical eye on that area, and I think we're all going to get burned by the consumer on this issue.
Well, and I'll go you one further, because I think it's much bigger than just an infrastructure issue. It's a whole cultural issue.
Big time.
And you know, one of the things that I was a little worried about in that study is in some of their checklist of things asked, do people have blogs? Do they, you know, market on social networks? And they had, you know, do you do a customer satisfaction study? And guess what? Like, everybody does a customer satisfaction study. But that's one of those things where just because you do a study and you listen to consumers doesn't mean that you're acting on those things and taking them seriously and, you know, modeling your business around what consumers are really telling you. And until you do that, you ain't doing conversational marketing.
Yeah, I think the linkage is, you know, is there an opportunity to take what marketers define as the customer sat survey and marry it with the conversation? And in theory, that's what's supposed to be taking place. You send email feedback to a company, you call up, you know, the 800 number, and there is a de facto survey process taking place. It's just that it's consumer initiated. The question is, is there enough operational investment to then feed the conversation? Where I have big issues is the default position on the marketing community is that let's build conversation by doing all of these external activities. And obviously I buy into a lot of that because our company monitors that. But I do think that if you really look at the heart and soul of what's driving bad conversation for companies, it's emanating from bad processes. I mean, at the end of the day, if you strip the bark off of all of the hype, fluff, and you name it, and you look at why companies in categories like electronics, healthcare, auto, you name it, are getting burned, a lot of it comes down to the fact that they are simply not listening in a meaningful way to consumers, and consumers are leaving a digital trail of venom and punishment. And this is why I think all of these romanticists out there need to take a step back and say, what really drives conversation? And what are we going to do to make sure that we shore that up first before we go out there and overpromise, overhype, you know, things to consumers?
Right, yeah, because right now the definition, as far as I can see, among most marketers and agencies of conversational marketers is they put up a blog, or they go out and they go into discussion boards and post comments, sometimes anonymously and sometimes as stealth people, which is not...
They buy media lists of influencers, which is okay.
The antithesis. It's the no, it's not. It's the antithesis of conversational marketing, because what it's doing is using all of these new tools and doing the same old marketing 1.0. Hey, here's a new place I can push my message. See, I'm doing conversational marketing. Dead wrong. And as
but
Pete
that's
says,
media
I
culture.
Couldn't.
That's, I mean, hey, that, but that's the media culture we're in. And I think that this is our rare opportunity to take a step back and say, okay, I mean, this is why I tend to like the word CGM, consumer generated media, underscore that what consumers are creating is media. It acts like media. It's just that it's not something you can point a finger, you can't just push a button and get the media. You almost have to earn it over time. In fact, Jim was the one who, mm-hmm. I think, really nailed the point at the very first WOMA conference that word of mouth is a long-term strategy, and I could not agree more with that.
Yep.
This is where you have to impress upon the C-level that these things don't happen overnight, but if you make the proper investment, you kind of reap the reward, and you reap the reward through Google search results, because at the end of the day, what's rising to the top there are good deeds or screw-ups.
Yeah. And the screw-ups may be faster than the good deeds, I mean, quite frankly. So, Pete, I think if I'm listening to this correctly, it's almost a semantical difference on what is conversational marketing as far as what's included in that. And you know, Jim's made some great points about, you know, just because you're doing, you know, a new Web 2.0 tactic in a one-way, unidirectional sort of manner, that doesn't make it, you know, conversational marketing. Another report that came out by Forrester on interactive marketing said all marketing will become interactive marketing by 2012, coincidentally the same time that spending would outpace.
I think they were actually redoing one of my reports
yeah.
in about 1999, so it still hasn't happened, so, you know, there you go.
Yeah, that doesn't mean it's conversational. It may mean interactive, may mean there's you know, there's consumer engages and there's kind of a reaction of some sort. I think that what Jim and I are talking about, it's really kind of a meaningful dialogue and back and forth. Is that fair, Jim?
Yeah, because interactive marketing is extremely binary, you know. You click on the ad, you don't click on the ad. You open the email, you don't open the email.
Mm-hmm.
But what the marketer doesn't really know is why you did or did not do that particular action. And in conversational marketing, you can literally watch, you know, not just one, but hundreds and thousands of consumers talking about why they are or are not buying such and such a company's products, or what they do and don't like about, you know, this company's policies in regards to the environment, or, you know, female beauty and body image and things like that.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it really gets to the heart of the why issue, which is one reason why, you know, I'm a big believer that really kind of measuring and understanding and then ultimately acting upon emotion is so critical. I think that, you know, degrees of emotion are what drive word of mouth online. I mean, consumers that feel betrayed about bad billing and wireless tend to tell everyone under the sun. People that are, you know, feel emotionally concerned about safety tend to do the same thing in the auto category. But to some extent, you really have to listen to get there. I mean, pure transactions won't do it. You have to have a mechanism that can actually meter the emotion. And this is one reason why, you know, I tell companies, like, listen, if you, before you do any of this, you know, stuff in the CGM social media area, you know, look in the, you know, look in the mirror and then call your 800 number and, or send feedback to yourself and find out whether you even are beginning to get to first base in terms of understanding how consumers really feel. And the problem is that most of the listening infrastructure is still, I don't even know if it's in Web 1.0. Now, the good news, let me kind of make this point clear. The good news is that I do believe the folks on the operational side are ready to make the move. I just gave a keynote speech to the Society of Consumer Affairs Professionals, and what's interesting there is that they know they need to make the move to the conversational zone. The problem is they don't get any money from the marketers, not one red cent. Maybe some exceptions. And I think that if what marketers need to do, I mean, my speech was, hey, listen, you should be taking this conversational hype and working it into your next memo to the CMO, not the head of operation, but the CMO, and saying, listen, we're the ones that truly are at the center of the new conversation. We have the opportunity to generate goodwill, better media. Let's rethink the way we allocate media. But I bet you if we went out and talked to every single media planner out there in New York or wherever and asked whether they are making decisions about whether to invest in listening pipes or consumer affairs, they're going to give you a blank sheet.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that another piece, there's the classic operational issue at a call center is how short can we make these calls?
Exactly.
How many calls per hour can each rep handle? And as long as you're thinking like that, you're never going to get to conversational marketing.
Now, isn't that ironic, though? I mean, isn't that the height of irony? Because, again, if we data mined all of the conversation out there from us, the Jim and Pete's and the millions of others, you know, hundreds of other marketing bloggers about, you know, we're all talking about engagement, you know, how to sustain engagement, how to keep their attention, how to extend the dialogue, how to squeeze more from that one particular conversation. Isn't it ironic what Jim just said? Yeah, that's right. The calculus of the call center is fewer is better, get them through faster. And that's the reward structure. And this is where I think this, again, the C-level, the folks on in the marketing level, all the way up to the CEO, need to be much, much more strategic and look at the landscape of opportunity and say, you know what, maybe we need to shift 5 to 10% of our media spend over to this area because there's enough empirical evidence through social media, CGM, whatever you want to call it, that it's impacting perceptions on the brand. And that, I think, if we get to that point, then I say, let the conversation begin, join the conversation. But I feel like we have to be much more credible before we start this.
Well, probably 10 years ago, Michael Bronner, who was the founder of Digitas, and he said one bad call with a call center will negate thousands, if not millions, of great brand impressions. He was dead right then. He's even more right now.
Well, and the age of video has magnified that. I mean,
this is
kind of a big theme I get into in this book I'm working on, which is all about how, yeah, it's like the more tools that are made available to consumers to amplify their pain, exactly what Jim described. I mean, suddenly, you know, a bad call center. Because what happened? Vincent Ferrari takes the AOL experience,
right,
puts it online, creates a fancy little video. You've got you got Bob Garfield going to the, you know, the blogosphere, and everyone's kind of taking these negative call center experience, which really is the heart of consumer emotion. It's the ultimate torture test of does the company really care? And they are now using all these tools that we as marketers are thrusting upon consumers, so you can't blame the consumer. You know, it's like, you know, come Christmas time, there's going to be 100 more gadgets that make it really easy to make companies look bad. But, and so call center beware. But this is where you have to, like, rejigger the calculus.
So bottom line this for me, guys, give me a quick answer to what should marketers be doing about conversational marketing? Pete.
Listen, I think some degree of investment in social media, experimenting with MySpace, Facebook, you know, creating blogs, I think all of that is fine. I think the very first thing, however, is they've got to take a fresh look at their listening infrastructure. That is, you're simply not credible if you don't start to revisit that. And it might be as simple as you don't need to reinvent Rome. It could be redefine, reshape, rebrand your feedback, you know, the interface, how it looks, how it feels. I love the example of Unilever. Before they did that big Dove Evolution campaign, they made absolutely sure that their Contact Us form was warm, inviting, empowering, and completely in sync with the tenor and tone of that campaign. Made it much more credible. But you've got to start there before you start jumping into all these other areas where you're just not credible.
Great. Jim, last word.
I think that marketers have to unlearn a lot of what we've been indoctrinated with over the last 50 years. They have to unlearn the fact that, or the approach that we're supposed to have one consistent brand message and just pound on it, you know, as long as humanly possible. That's not what a dialogue is about. Marketers have to unlearn the spin mindset that the minute we walk in the doors of our corporate headquarters and get to our desks, you know, we check our consumer mindset and we put on this spin mindset of marketers. The minute you walk out the door, you're a consumer again, and if you have one of these experiences with a company, you're outraged and, you know, passions flare and things. So we know what it feels like to have a good customer experience and to have a good conversation with a company and what it's not. So we just have to bring more of our real, you know, consumer personas with us to our desks and not become corporate drones.
Hear, hear.
Great, guys. Well, thank you very much for your time and insights. For our listeners, now it's your turn. Let us know what you're thinking about this particular topic by leaving a comment on this blog. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with our next ProfCast, Pay-Per-Click Boom or Bust, featuring Alan Rim Kaufman, who leads
wow.
Rim Kaufman Group, yep, and a fan of Pay-Per-Click, and Steve Rubel, SVP in Edelman, who's skeptical on the future of Pay-Per-Click. So don't miss it. Thanks very much.